The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Come on, baby, don't you wanna go? Come on, baby, don't you wanna go? Back to the land of California, to my sweet home, Colorado. Come on, Jimmy, don't you wanna go? Hey, come on, Jimmy, don't you wanna go? Back to the land of California, to my sweet home, Colorado. Yeah. Come on, Jimmy, give me some.
So, folks, in the original Sweet Home Chicago by the great late Robert Johnson, the tune doesn't go to that same old place, Sweet Home Chicago. It's to that land of California, Sweet Home Colorado. I assure you that a couple years ago when Biff Gore and I did this song live on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show here on 710 KNUS, we were not talking about or alluding to the Californication of Colorado. Just want to throw that out there. And the reason why, as we continue here on, once again, the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS, I wanted to play a tune about that Sweet Home Colorado, is because as we get going here in the second hour of the program, I am very happy to be joined by the host of a just-launched brand-new podcast about Colorado and the people of Colorado. It's called the Colorful Colorado Podcast, and its host, our guest, Heidi Ganahl, of course, CU Region at Large, successful entrepreneur all around, good friend of this show. Great to have you. Welcome to the program once again, Heidi.
Thanks, Jimmy. Oh my gosh, I need to steal that tune. What a great entry to this conversation.
Thank you. Well, fortunately, you have half of the duo there that produced that tune right here with you talking right now.
That's wonderful.
It's music and on the topic of music, what kind of music do you like? What do you enjoy listening to?
Oh my gosh, all across the board. But I was raised, I mean, I went to high school and early college in the 80s. And so the little known fact, I'm a heavy metal like girl. I love Van Halen's my favorite band of all time. But I also love the 90s music like Erasure, The Cult, The Cure. And then I love country music. And I'm across the board. I really enjoy music. No matter what the venue, no matter what the style, it's just, it makes my heart happy.
You know, we have, for the band that I'm the harmonica player in, the Lapdogs, D-A-W-G-S, we have a gig coming up, by the way, in Westminster at Elevate on May 15th, 7:30 p.m. for anybody who wants to come out. But one of our tunes is Ice Cream Man, the Van Halen song Ice Cream Man. That's a
yes,
fun one.
I
get a couple really long harmonica solos in that one, so I enjoy it, got to tell you.
That is a great song. My favorite Van Halen song of all time is Ain't Talk About Love, but I like them all. And people ask me, like, are you a Sammy Hagar, David Lee Roth girl? And I love them both. I just love them for different reasons, like, you know, how you love your kids differently.
Sure. Yeah, that's the right comparison. How you love your kids differently. No, I think that I get it completely. And when it comes to, like, I'm similar about some of the guitarists of the Allman Brothers, but we won't get off on that tangent. Are you musically inclined at all? Do you play any instruments?
Heck no.
Have you?
Not at all. Like, my parents tried. I think we tried with the flute and with the clarinet and just even the basic recorder could not make it work. I did play the piano a little bit, but I had to. It was a big struggle. So I would not say I'm musically inclined.
Fair enough. I did take guitar lessons for many years before I... Well, I got old enough where I couldn't really take guitar lessons anymore, but I didn't keep up enough. I didn't have the patience, but I found a knack for the harmonica when I was in eighth grade. So I ended up kind of going more in the direction of playing harmonica and finding a knack for that while I was still doing guitar lessons. And so it evolved over time in a neat way. Now, don't ask me to play guitar because I cannot. But let's talk about the color. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, Jim. I was going to say, I did learn a song on the guitar when I think I was in fourth grade, Leaving on a Jet Plane. I think I know still how to play that, but it's a stretch.
Huh. Well, I learned several songs, number of songs, and I doubt I could play a single one of them anymore. I'm just going to stick to the harmonica, and that'll be fine for me. All right. So tell me about the Colorful Colorado podcast that you just launched. What's the deal there? What's your motivation? What's going on? What are you planning to do? Just tell me what's going on there.
Well, you know, as a regent and as the CEO of an organization that focuses on young people, She Factor, I noticed that, you know, we talk a lot about the divide in our country and in our state. And really the way I think you get across that is by telling people's stories or hearing people's stories and learning more about them as individuals. And then it's awfully hard to attack somebody if you know them and you like them and you can find connections in some way. So I came up with this idea to travel the state and feature people who are like the epitome or the essence of Colorado and kind of old school Colorado, that rugged individualism. Like, who are the people that are out there making a difference and making our state the place that we all love? And if we can all agree on a common theme that we love our state, we're all passionate about Colorado for different reasons, it's just a starting point for us to reconnect and kind of break down that divide.
Yeah, that lack of connection is, I think, twofold right now. Number one, politically, people are just divided along political lines, and we haven't had that willingness for so many to actually engage in conversations, except when you get to, I think, average Coloradans who are not as politically divided, don't pay as much attention to politics per se, and are more willing to interact with people with whom they disagree than, say, partisans may be on either side. But you have political disconnect, but then you also have the fact that this pandemic has kept so many millions of Coloradans, all of us, apart in different ways for so long.
Yeah, I certainly think COVID has added to the divide in our country and in our state. And that's partly why I wanted to do this podcast as a kind of a traveling one, that we could get out and get off of Zoom and actually talk to people one-on-one live. And one of the fun things we're going to do is set up a remote podcast trailer studio. We could take it to a park or to a parking lot and have people actually there, like an audience, engaging with the interview with the person that we're featuring. So, and then we can have some barbecue and hang out and talk and do things that we haven't done in a long time. I'm really excited about that part.
Yeah, the trailer, I saw the trailer. It looks really quite swanky, Heidi Ganahl. When you're talking about traveling around the state at times, putting on these barbecue events or interviewing people actually around the state for Colorful Colorado, I mean, it makes intuitive sense. But what really got you thinking, you know, I should move about, if it's Colorful Colorado podcast, and actually interact with people around the state while also doing some things from a studio setup and whatnot?
I just wanted to keep it flexible because I know some people don't feel comfortable or can't do it live. And so we wanted to be able to access anybody. So we have the Zoom component, but then we also have a home studio at my house that people can come to that's decorated really cute. And we can do it that way, or we can meet you where you are. And that's the idea of the trailer. And, you know, one of the things I loved about campaigning when I ran for regent was visiting all these amazing cities around our state, whether it was Cortez or Sterling or Lamar or Craig. I just had such a good time connecting with people out in rural Colorado. And so that was kind of the fun component for me, was to get me and the kids out and about. I bought an old kind of vintage RV, and we're going to hook up the trailer and just get on the road.
Now, when you're going around, I mean, if you're calling it Colorful Colorado, it makes sense to actually showcase different parts of Colorado and to travel around Colorado when you can. But when you talk about connection, I want to go back to this point. Bridging divides is so important, especially in this divisive climate that we're in right now. What's your thought on that and how we should be approaching connecting with people in a way that can bring us together and not divide us?
Well, you know, I got some good advice when I first got elected to the region board, because obviously it's a pretty divisive board politically, was to reach across the aisle and find teeny tiny ways to connect. Like, even if you just agree on, hey, do you like beer or wine? Or do you like football or basketball better? You just try and find, you know, really simple connections that you can build on. And that's how you build trust between people. And in order to negotiate political conversations or tough issues, you've got to have some trust, right? And I really think trust is what's missing right now with our political leaders, with our government, with our, you know, the schools. There's just so much mistrust. And the way you rebuild trust is by building connection, even in very small ways. And so I think that's the essence of what we're trying to do here, is just get people to reconnect with why they love Colorado, what it is about Colorado that they love. One of my favorite questions we ask the guests is, what's the most Colorado thing you've ever done? And we get some crazy cool answers.
What's the most Colorado thing you've ever done, Heidi Goodall?
Oh my gosh, I had a feeling you were going to ask that. There's so many. You know, I've climbed a 14er. I've gone river rafting. I got thrown out of the boat river rafting. And so that was a little freaky, but it was, you know, I made it through. So that's important. Going to a CU Buff game from Folsom Field. I mean, nothing more beautiful and more exciting than being on the field and looking up the Flatiron. And then, you know, just on that campaign effort for region, I got to see so many cool places around Colorado that I didn't know existed. Like, I think back to a little schoolhouse in a tiny town outside of Durango, Colorado, or being on the sand dunes. I'd never been to the sand dunes before, and they're amazing. So, you know, just there's little flavors of it all over Colorado of things that I've done or experienced or, you know, been involved with that make me think of our great state, and obviously skiing and snowboarding too.
The only time I've ever been river rafting was I was 16 and my dad, brother, and I went on a trip. We had a few extended family members, but we went to the Grand Canyon. So the only time I rafted was down the Grand Canyon, like half of the canyon. That was quite an experience, to be sure. Heidi Goodall, I want to shift gears to a couple of issue questions, but I'm curious. I mean, we're talking about your Colorful Colorado podcast. Where can people go to check it out?
Sure. They can just go to HeidiGoodall.com, and there's information about the different episodes. You don't have to watch them in a certain order. It's whatever kind of interests you, whether it's the guest or the part of Colorado that they're from. We're going to launch next week with a soft launch, and we'll have 5 to 7 episodes that we'll launch with, and then we'll hopefully get 2 or 3 episodes out a week. And we'll also have a calendar on the website and on our social media, on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, that will kind of preview where we're going to go and what we're going to talk about, so you can get involved that way too.
Welcome to the podcasting world, from one podcaster to another. Heidi Goodall, our guest. Of course, we know her as CU Region at Large, and I got a couple of higher ed questions I want to ask, including one. I know a lot of listeners are concerned about this campus vaccination requirement on public colleges, universities, and community colleges that looks like it's going to be happening. If there are any parents or students who are upset about this, what can they do about it?
That's a great question, Jimmy. I actually had a lot of people reach out, and this is what I've been told by CU. As of May 15th, there will be a website that they can go to and fill out a personal exemption form if they don't feel comfortable, you know, taking the vaccination. There won't be any additional mask requirements or anything related to that. So that's one way to do it. If you're upset and you want to vocalize your upset around this, then I would suggest you can email the region board, and the email address, you can just Google like regents@CU, and it'll come up with an address, or you can reach out to me, of course, on social media, and I'll get it for you. Or you can testify at our region board meeting, which is, I think it's June 17th. It's remote still. And it's pretty easy. You get a couple minutes, but you have to sign up in the days beforehand. And you can talk to the entire regent board and President Kennedy about how you feel about this. So it's important, you know, to help us advocate for you to either email or call or show up for that board meeting to express your viewpoint.
It's important for folks to know that they can do that exemption form if they feel so inclined, at a minimum, whether you're able to testify and help get a change happen or something or not. Regardless, I gather you can go ahead and file that exemption form. So that's good, at least for folks to know. Then also this week, our president of the United States, Joe Biden, finally addressed Congress. Nobody really knew if he was going to ever end up doing it. And he did it, and he managed to get through just over an hour of a speech. And one of the things that he touched on was higher education and this goodie bag that he would like to do in terms of massive expansion of the Pell Grants. He'd like to have tuition-free community and public college. It seems to me that this is a vast boondoggle that he's looking at the federal level. I don't know if it would get through Congress. I think it would depend on how the Democrats would decide to move forward with such legislation in the U.S. Senate. But what's your take on that expansive agenda he's got regarding all sorts of higher education money and programs?
Well, you know, Jimmy, it's hard to navigate what the plan is and where the money is going to come from. Obviously, there's only so much money in the bucket, right, when it comes to the government, unless they want to print more. So obviously, I'm concerned about that. I'm also concerned about, you know, the idea that we haven't really figured out K through 12 yet. Like, you know, our reading levels, math levels around the country are concerning. And, you know, I don't know why adding another couple years of free education or so-called free education is going to solve that problem for us. So I think we've got to really figure out how to navigate education or reimagine school first. And then I think it's basically just going to extend the idea of a high school diploma, right? Because if everybody has 2 years in addition to the high school, the 12 years that we traditionally do, then I don't think that's going to differentiate people if they do go get an additional community college education. I do always encourage folks to explore junior college, community college, and obviously vocational training if a four-year degree isn't the right thing for you. You know, I think there's good and bad to the idea, but right now I just don't think they've thought it through, and I don't think I don't understand where the money's coming from to do this.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's got all sorts of expansive tax increase ideas, but with all of the things in his agenda, and from higher ed to K through 12 funding to so-called infrastructure, and I say so-called because it includes a lot of infrastructure things and a lot of things that aren't infrastructure related, to healthcare, and just he's got a million different items that he wants to fund. And so that's where you do have to scratch your head and wonder, okay, how in the world are you actually going to pay for this? Well, it's probably not. It's going to be the debt. But the bottom line when it comes to higher education costs, this isn't going to help at all in regards to actually holding down the real rising cost of college, incentivizing. It's just going to kind of put the system in, I think, a very warped position. And basic economics tells us that it's going to cause even more problems from that warped position.
So, you know, I don't think that any of the solutions I'm seeing on the table right now from our current government or leadership are the right ones from my perspective as a regent at CU. I think it's more important to work with industry, partner with them to create the workforce of the future and figure out exactly what students need to get great jobs when they graduate and to make a good salary and make a good living and do something that they're passionate about. I think industry is being very innovative on that front, whether it's Apple, Google, Amazon, lots of your local companies are getting very creative about how to train their folks that they want to come up in the ranks. I love the idea of digital badging that you're starting to see on LinkedIn, kind of like Boy Scout badges with different skills and expertises. I think we're seeing a lot more virtual training around LinkedIn and lynda.com, which they bought. And then I like to say we've got to figure out adaptive learning or experiential learning. Like if you want to be a coder, what's the best way to learn to code? Well, it's to go code. And I could give 100 more examples like that. So I think we're leaving a lot on the table if we just focus on providing more money from the government to fund, degrees that are not tied to what our workforce needs and what our kids need to get great jobs.
In addition, of course, to the fact that these programs will result in an increase in costs for college and more. It's definitely going to make the situation worse. Why not look at innovative solutions like you're talking about that are happening in the private sector? And I do really think that there is an understanding increasingly that by more and more people that you do have a variety of possibilities for post-secondary education.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. And it's getting more fun, more like out of the box, more creative. I think that we're going to reimagine school in lots of different ways. I think COVID accelerated that, whether it's the transformation to online learning or it's getting industry and businesses more involved in, you know, educating our youth and mm-hmm. creating apprenticeships and internships. There's so many exciting, cool things happening that I think the current proposals just leave all of that off the table. And it's like the best, most innovative solutions aren't being talked about right mm-hmm. now by our leaders in D.C.
Yeah, I think that's well put. Or for the most part, here in Colorado. Heidi Ganahl, our guest here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. One more issue question for you, and that is just on reopening. You are a small business owner. You also launched and ran and oversaw the growth of Camp Bow Wow, an incredible company, doggy daycare company. What's your take on reopening right now and what's needed to get businesses back on track in Colorado?
Well, I don't see any reason not to reopen. Our vaccination rates are very good. You know, people are feeling, you know, they feel comfortable doing what they're going to do. We have to trust the consumers and the actual, you know, parents with kids in school to make good decisions for their family and themselves. So I trust the consumer and I trust the business owners to make good decisions for their business. I just think it's time to, you know, move forward and reopen and get Colorado back to being Colorado.
And as we see economic data coming in that's improved, it's like, okay, as the country is finally starting to reopen, that is to say, people are finally allowed to live their lives and earn their livelihoods again. Of course, the economy is going to improve. Let's ramp it up, guys. That's my viewpoint.
Yeah, I agree, Jimmy. And people are ready. They're ready to go back to events. They're ready to go back to watching sports. They're ready. Kids are ready to start playing sports again. And I think the whiplash of being locked down, not locked down, locked down, not locked down is really tough on the mental health of our kids and us too. And especially working moms. Working moms are getting hit hard. There's going to be a lot of fallout on that front. And so the data does not look good. Mm. And also our recovery, I mean, we're in the bottom of the states when they're ranked based on recovery from the pandemic. So that keeping us locked down is not going to help that number move up.
That's stunning. All right. Last but not least, once again, where can people go to check out the brand new Colorful Colorado podcast, Heidi Ganahl?
Thanks, Jimmy. Go to HeidiGanahl.com. There's a place you can sign up with just your name and your email address, and we'll keep you updated on all the episodes and where we're traveling around, or follow me on social media. I'm on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, you name it.
Heidi Ganahl, G-A-N-A-H-L. Thanks so much for joining us. Always great to check in with you, my friend.
Thanks, Jimmy. Have a great day.
Once again, Heidi Ganahl joining us here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. We definitely have a big crisis in higher education. And make no mistake about it, folks, Biden's plans will make things dramatically worse. There's no doubt in my mind about that, any way, shape, or form. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll preview my interviews with Jack Phillips and Judge Ken Starr about religious liberty in America today. Keep it right here. It's the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS.
wasn't, it was bad religion. Well, it messed up my mind, it made me feel so mean. Drove everybody crazy, made them wanna scream. Well, my words, they cut sharp like a deep incision. Killing my friends with my bad religion. Well, now who's that talking on my television? Some mean old preacher with his bad religion.
Bumper music known to man, nearly 8 years running. It's the Jimmy Sangenberger Show here on News Talk 710 KNUS. The Reverend Jimmy Bratcher bringing us back. Some pretty good slide guitar work going on there. The man can play, sing, and preach. This is a fun down-home blues tune. Check it out. It's called Bad Religion. Jimmy Bratcher, though, unfortunately, the Reverend Bratcher spells Jimmy wrong. He spells it with an I-E instead of a Y. I don't know why he would do that, but some people do. I feel bad for him, but it's okay. It's pretty much the same name, except not. Jimmy with a Y, certainly better. Welcome back to the show. It's good to talk with you today. Gosh, book ending here on 710 KNUS. I filled in for George Brockler this morning from 6 to 9. And then kicked things off here with the Jimmy Sangenberger Show 5 to 7. We are in the final segment of the program. And I wanted to start off with the Reverend Bratcher tune because I intend to preview for you what's coming up on this week's edition of my web show in partnership with the Washington Examiner, Jimmy at the Crossroads. It'll be streaming live at 11 a.m. on Monday on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Jimmy at the Crossroads. But you can download it or you can watch it after the fact. You'll be able to catch standalone interviews. But I wanted to preview the two interviews that I already recorded in advance of Monday's program with Jack Phillips and his attorney, Ryan Bangert, of Alliance Defending Freedom. Of course, Jack Phillips, we know he's been persecuted for his faith and exemplifying and living out his faith in his business at Masterpiece Cake Shop for years. 2012 is when he first got into hot water because he said, I don't want to bake a gay wedding cake because it violates my religious beliefs and is a message that I cannot be a party to. That led to years of litigation on that. And then, of course, the gender transition cake that he refused to bake a few years ago. So I caught up with Jack Phillips and attorney Ryan Bangert. I'm going to play an excerpt of that conversation. And then I also caught up with Judge Ken Starr, who has a brand new book out, Religious Liberty in Crisis. And that is a tremendous read. And so I figured I'd give you a special preview of what's coming and Jimmy at the Crossroads, extensive interviews with both of those gentlemen. Well, I guess all three of them. And also we're going to have an incredible Crossroads panel discussion with clergymen, including friend Biff Gore and Rabbi Jonathan Hausman afterwards. That will be a live panel. But without further ado, let's go ahead and take a listen to an excerpt of my interview with Jack Phillips, recorded on Thursday for my web show in partnership with the Washington Examiner, Jimmy at the Crossroads.
Yeah, as a follower of Jesus Christ, that directs every aspect of my life, from the way that I treat my employees, the way that I treat my customers, the cakes that I decide to create, even in my personal life, the way that I handle my finances, my marriage, raising my kids. It impacts every aspect of my life.
And Jack, to that point, when it comes to every aspect in the business side, you know, a lot of this dealing with this question of religious liberty is, do businesses have the right to exercise their religious faith on a day-to-day basis? How do you look at that from a business standpoint?
I think that any businessman has to stand by the principles that they've adhere to in all aspects of their life, just like I just said. When my wife and I started our cake shop, we sat down and we decided that there were certain cakes that we would create and certain cakes that we couldn't create. And among them would be like cakes that celebrated Halloween, or cakes that denigrated or defamed other people, cakes with alcohol in them, cakes that celebrated marijuana, which way back then wasn't even on the radar. But we had guidelines that we decided that we couldn't step across. And when it came time for these two young men to ask for a cake that celebrated a different view of marriage than my biblical view, we had to decline that cake. But we did tell them, you know, I told them, you know, I'll make you other custom cakes. I'll sell you anything in my shop. You're welcome here, you know, anytime. It's just this cake that I can't create.
Well, and to that point, Jack, and then I'll go to Ryan. I remember interviewing on that day that we did the live remote for 710 KNUS, a gay man who said, I've never been turned away. I've been more than welcome to come and do business here, to get delicious cakes, to have custom cakes made. Just there are certain things that I know I can't request of Jack because that would violate his religious beliefs. And I think that's such an important point to hear from someone who's just testifying to your good nature as a human being, as a man of faith, that you're going to treat everybody with respect, serve every customer. It's just certain messages on these custom cakes, as you view yourself an artist, are not appropriate to your faith.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if we're talking about the same gay man, but he also, the one that I'm thinking of, testified in our trial just a few weeks ago and said the same things, that he knows he's welcome in our shop and that there are certain cakes that I can't create for anybody. And we, you know, welcome that testimony.
Ryan Bangert, attorney at Alliance Defending Freedom. Let's go back to 2012 on him. I mean, this has been a 9-year saga of various points of litigation. Walk us through some of the key steps in the process to get to this point of a trial that happened just last month on a different matter, which was a gay, or rather a gender transition cake.
Thanks, Jimmy. And this case has been a long time in coming. And I think it just points out the fact that Jack has been relentlessly harassed because of his faith and because of the stand that he's taken. Now, this case was not about excluding certain individuals because of who they are. This case has always been about Jack's principled refusal not to speak certain messages with which he disagrees because of his faith. And the government should never be permitted to force citizens like Jack Phillips, like others, to speak certain messages that would violate their conscience and their belief. And like you said, this case has been a long time in coming. The plaintiff in this case, Autumn Scardina, made this request of Jack all the way back when his first case was granted certiorari to go to the U.S. Supreme Court. So it's been years and years and years, and Jack has had to live with this harassment for a long time, and it's just unconscionable. It really demonstrates the fact that the justice system is being weaponized by folks who want to engage in cancel culture to ruin people with whom they disagree.
I think it's such an important point, and it's so true. You look at the government, though, and how the government has handled these cases. Ryan, for example, the Colorado Civil Rights Commission was found not to have handled things without religious bigotry. In fact, the Supreme Court, in a decision written by Justice Anthony Kennedy, the Obergefell decision writer. He was the author of the decision that said gay marriage must be legal across the country. He said that religious discrimination was part of what the decision-making process was for the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. Talk to us about that aspect of how the government has mistreated Jack Phillips, Masterpiece Cake Shop, and religious liberty.
Absolutely. The first time through, when Jack was before the commission, it was apparent, it was on the record, several statements being made that Jack's faith was just a cover for discrimination. And you're right, Justice Kennedy said that's unacceptable. It's unacceptable for our government, for decision makers, to have the power to ruin a man's life, to view his beliefs and his faith as simply nothing more than cover for discrimination, when in fact, all that Jack is trying to do is serve all people, regardless of who they are. He simply doesn't want to be forced to speak certain messages that directly conflict with his religious belief and to use his God-given artistic talents in ways that his faith says he can't. And so you're right. Justice Kennedy was completely correct when he said this was discrimination of the worst kind, but it was discrimination against a religious believer.
Jack Phillips, you've been at this for, 9 years now? And yep. I can just imagine the extent of the burden that you have been facing, your family, your business, the people who work for you. Talk to us a little bit about that, the challenge of constantly having to face these legal battles and more, personal insults and attacks, maybe, you know, just all the negativity, but also what it has taught you about people of faith coming together, unified to say, we need to support religious liberty on as a unified front and come together in defense of our fundamental constitutional right.
Yeah, you're right, Jimmy. It has been a long time. And going back to 2012, when the two men came into my shop, within just a couple of weeks, this attorney that's suing me in this go-round had already sent me emails calling me a hypocrite and a bigot, and it also contacted the Colorado Civil Rights Commission telling them that if these two men didn't sue me, that Scardina, the attorney that's suing me, would take up that case. And we've had other requests from other cakes from this attorney, including a cake with Satan smoking a marijuana joint. And in a face-to-face meeting with this attorney, I was told that if this case was thrown out or for any technicality, or if I won this case, that I would get a call the next day with another cake and we'd start all over again. So that's just the situation that we're facing here. And even if all the people in the country come and support us, which we're grateful that they are, our courts need to be clear that no American should be able to be forced to live and work against their conscience, to be forced to say things that go against their conscience, that the government is supposed to defend those rights.
Once again, that's an excerpt of my interview with Jack Phillips and attorney Ryan Bangert of Alliance Defending Freedom from my web show, Jimmy at the Crossroads, is going to be debuting this coming Monday. And by the way, Jack Phillips has a book coming out in just a week or two, The Cost of My Faith, How a Decision in My Cake Shop Took Me to the Supreme Court. Keep that in mind. Support Jack however you can. I'm sure it's going to be a powerful read. I also caught up with Judge Ken Starr for the special Religious Liberty in Crisis-focused web show coming up this week. And I want to share an excerpt of that. He's got a new book called Religious Liberty in Crisis. This is a lot of fun. He's always a delight to talk to. And his book is just truly wonderful. I cannot recommend it enough, as you'll hear me allude to in my conversation with Judge Starr. In both of these interviews, by the way, we talk for quite a while. These are just brief excerpts of some very important conversations. Here's an excerpt of my interview with Judge Ken Starr.
All right. Welcome back, Jimmy at the Crossroads, coming to you in partnership with the Washington Examiner. Again, the only show host who occasionally will whip out one of his harmonicas, especially when he's got a special guest who, at least so he's told me in the past, has enjoyed my harmonica playing, even giving me the moniker Jimmy the Harmonica Man at one point. As we focus in on the question of the matter of religious liberty in crisis here on Jimmy at the Crossroads, I'm so pleased to welcome Judge Ken Starr, author of the new book, Religious Liberty in Crisis. Judge Starr, my friend, welcome.
Bring it on home, Jimmy. Jimmy the harmonica man.
You know I had
good
to
be
do
with
that.
You. Yeah, of course you did.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it.
The government cannot coerce you to do that.
No, they you did it. And they cannot tell me I'm not allowed to play the harmonica either. Thank you very much. So I'm well grateful said. To have you on, especially as we follow up from Jack Phillips and his attorney, one of his attorneys at Alliance Defending Freedom, Ryan Bangard, on this matter of religious liberty in crisis. It's so poignant, so timely. Your book, I have the advanced copy that I got right here, Religious Liberty in Crisis, Exercising Your Faith in an Age of Uncertainty. Judge Starr, most people, when they think of you, they often think of the Clinton investigation and how you spearheaded his impeachment prosecution. You also went ahead, of course, and were on the floor of the United States Senate during the trial of the first impeachment of former President Donald J. Trump. But you were a Solicitor General for the United States. You were on the Circuit Court of Appeals judge. You have an extensive history as a law professor, of course, president of Baylor University. I would love for you to just tell us a little bit about your background legally and how you find it so important to really talk about religious liberty at this point in time.
Yes. And as we saw during the pandemic, Jimmy, religious liberty is always vulnerable, is always in crisis. But this was a mega crisis. This was a perfect storm of cultural forces and political forces coming together to really intrude quite remarkably in an unprecedented way into a religious freedom, even gathering to worship. But my work on this book began, Jimmy, 40 years ago, not the writing of it, but the living in the stories of religious freedom that said to me when the pandemic came, it's time to put all this together and to spread the good word that while the culture tends to be quite hostile in so many respects to religious faith and the exercise of religious faith, the Supreme Court of the United States has been year after year, in case after case, a friend and a defender of religious liberty as well as it should be, given the fact that the Constitution of the United States and the first 10 amendments speak powerfully to the idea of freedom of conscience and the exercise of our religious faith. So I hope this book will be a tool I'm calling it of transmission for parents and for grandparents to transmit America's culture of freedom, beginning with religious freedom, those first 16 words of the First Amendment. I thought that the pandemic said to the world, religious freedom is quite vulnerable. We need to understand it more fully, more deeply as a people, as a culture.
Judge Starr, in reading this book and having interviewed you on a number of occasions, spoken off air and several times, having had time in person with one another, I know your voice and I can recognize your voice. And it really does shine through in this book. I have to tell you that as I'm reading it, I could hear Judge Ken Starr, the audiobook going on in my mind. And I have to say that that is such an important thing for a writer. It's not an easy thing. As a writer myself, I know it can be a challenge to really capture your voice, and you do it very well. And I wanted to point that out because when you're passionate about something like religious liberty, like the U.S. Constitution, as you are, it's really important that you make sure you can speak from the heart. So I'd just love for you to speak a little bit to that and sort of your mindset in approaching this book, capturing how you speak and capturing how you think and what you believe.
Well, first of all, I treasure, and thank you for saying what you just did. It's very kind of you. I treasure our constitutional order, our constitutional republic, the very idea that we live in liberty, but it's ordered liberty. We can't do anything we want, whenever we want. There is order to social arrangements, and that's the way it should be. And I think what we were also seeing during the pandemic were outbreaks of terrible lawlessness that suggested that we need a return to these first principles that once bound us all together, united us all together, regardless of party and philosophy, faith or lack of faith. And I hope that this book will serve as a clarion call to those who are willing to love America to say, yes, embedded in our Constitution are principles that are sacred to the idea and the ideals of human dignity and human freedom. And so I feel passionately about that subject. I feel as if we have broken down in the transmission process. It's as if the transmission has been falling out culturally, educationally, as so many of our young people seem not to appreciate the culture of freedom that brings people across the border illegally. What are they coming for? Freedom and opportunity. And opportunity is the child of freedom. If you don't have freedom, you're not going to have opportunity. And people are coming here, you know, by the thousands and the hundreds of thousands, and so many more want to come in. How can we therefore, as we hear so often from the political class and the cultural class, this is a defective country with a defective founding? No, it wasn't. It was not a defective founding at all. The principles were there. We had to eradicate slavery, yes. And we must, in fact, always be mindful of the human dignity of each and every person, regardless of race and so forth. But let's honor the country. And this is, in fact, a book, 170 pages, that frankly is a tribute to America and America's culture of freedom. I want to see it transmitted to the rising generation.
Now back on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show, that's an excerpt of my interview with Judge Ken Starr, debuting in its entirety this Monday on my web show in partnership with the Washington Examiner. Online, Jimmy at the Crossroads, but you can get it on demand. Subscribe to my YouTube channel for that effort, youtube.com/Jimmy at the Crossroads. And check out Judge Starr's book, Religious Liberty in Crisis. A really good read. Well, that is it for us today. Thanks so much for being along for the ride. 5 hours of Jimmy Sengenberger here on 710 KNUS. I really appreciate your listenership and support. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend. We will be back next time, same place, next Saturday night with more engaging, intelligent talk, Sang style, right here on News Talk 710 KNUS. In the meantime, have a great rest of weekend, and as always, may God bless America.